A nun, badly needing to use the restroom, walked into a local Hooters. The place was hopping with music and loud conversation, and every once in a while, the lights would turn off. Each time the lights would go out, the place would erupt in cheers! Woo! However, when the revelers saw the nun, the room was dead silent. She walked up to the bartender and asked, "May I please use the restroom?" The bartender replied, "Okay, but I should warn you that there is a statue of a naked man in there wearing only a fig leaf." "Well, in that case, I'll just look the other way," said the nun. So the bartender showed the nun to the back of the restaurant. After a few minutes, she came back out, and the whole place stopped just long enough to give the nun a loud round of applause. She went to the bartender and said, "Sir, I don't understand. Why did they applaud me just because I went to the restroom?" "Well, now they know you're one of us," said the bartender. "Would you like a drink?" "No, thank you, but I still don't understand," said the puzzled nun. "You see," laughed at the bartender, "every time someone lifts the fig leaf on that statue, the lights go out." You know, I tried to start the first episode with a joke that I wrote myself, but it wasn't very funny. So for this episode, I Googled some jokes that are really kind of funny, and I hope this first, the one that I opened with, wasn't too dirty. Yeah, but it was really funny. And so I want to include jokes, I think, in every episode, but I just want to say hi to you. If you're a new listener, welcome to the Sunshining Podcast. I'm so excited to be doing season 3 of it, and I hope that the season of the Sunshining Podcast will shine some light into your life. Today I'm going to have a guest on my podcast that was a co-worker alongside me at Alaska Ranch this summer. So bring her on soon, and you need to learn more about her soon. But first, I just want to say, even though I'm going to be sharing jokes on my podcast, I don't want you to think of my podcast as just a joke. You know, I want to be sharing some serious stuff, and I really hope it's going to shine some light. Okay, I already said that. It's time to turn on the light switch. I don't know if I'm going to continue to talk about time on every single episode, but I do know that in this episode, we will be talking about light. I heard so many amazing conversations at Alaska Ranch during the summer that I wish I could have recorded them for my podcast. My guest today was at the heart of so many of those conversations. So there's many things that we could, have a conversation about. And actually, as I was editing this podcast, I was like, we could have talked about that. Maybe some spoiler alerts here, she mentioned that, she lost her dad. And we could have just talked about father figures and how God is the perfect father. And I don't know, we could have went down that trail. We could talk about, there's various other things we could have talked about. But, and so it can be hard to pick just one topic to talk about. But I thought this topic of light and darkness would be a very fitting topic. So we're going to talk about that today after we just kind of get to know my guest some, find out a little bit more about her. So before working at Alaska Ranch this summer, you had some experience with Youth with a Mission. What was that like?
Dude, Youth with a Mission was crazy. It changed my life. I went into, I flew to New Zealand. It was the first time I'd ever, been on my own. I was, 19 years old. No. I was 19 years old. And it was, I felt like Peter stepping out of the boat and walking towards Jesus. And I was like, whoa, dang, this is kind of scary. I'm on the other side of the world, and I'm going to be going through airports on my own, but I'm blonde, and I think I'm going to lose everything, and, I had this really, low opinion of myself. I was like, I'm terrible at being an adult. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can find my plane. I don't know if I can do this, but the way that I was at that time was, even if I have anxiety, I'm going to pretend like I don't, and then I was like, I'll shove through it, and just do it. So I get there, and it was, very first week, the Lord started being like, hey, Emma, this is who I really am. This is like how I really want you to view me, how I really want you to live your life, how I really want you to view yourself. And dang, I had a ton of like anger at God and anger at myself and anger at people and stuff like that. And the Lord just changed that and began the healing process. And it really like, it was a whole different way of living. You're living in community, you're living with a, not a strict schedule, as in you don't have a chance to do anything you want to, but like a very fast paced schedule. And like, I would be like bombshell 1 week, character nature of God week, just explosions of the brain. And then the very next week was like missions week with Dan Bauman. And he's such a powerful guy. And I was like, I don't have time to take this all in. But I, you know, it was amazing, like what all the Lord led me through in that time. And he had his hands over it the whole time. And he really, really changed my life and changed the way that I saw him and fed my passion for him. Like, I was already passionate about God. But whenever I saw him face to face in New Zealand, basically, and realized what it meant to have community with God, and community with other people. And so, like, coming home from New Zealand, I was like, dang, I see God. And then people back at home were like, no, Emma, people don't see God. And I was like, you got it wrong. it was a struggle coming back home. But while I was there, it was amazing.
This question might sound kind of funny here. If I read it directly from my notes here. But you're just an average, ordinary, not a famous person, but you're working on books, or you've written books?
I started writing when I was little. And I would write from like stories that I was playing with my siblings and stuff like that. And like when I was 14, like end of my 14th year, beginning of my 15th year, my dad got sick with cancer. And so like, as dad got sicker and sicker, I started using writing as a way, like, I was never taught how to express my emotions. I was actually kind of taught that my emotions, like especially negative ones, were like really bad. And, I shouldn't express them. And if I were to ever like express my emotions, then I'm being weak or whatever. And so writing was the only way I knew how to do that. And so that's where I started. Was that, like, that's where I really got kicked off. Like, I wrote Journey Through the Displacer, and that was, like, in that moment, or in that time frame, as my dad was getting sicker, and he passed away right before I turned 16, and I, like, my character, my main character was searching desperately for hope, because my self in real life was searching desperately for hope, and that was the only way that I knew how to, like, get it like fleshed out, because like I wasn't sure how to think or feel in real life. And then whenever I went to New Zealand, I kept talking about how I was a writer and how like certain words used to define me, and like how I was hoping that these words didn't define me or whatever, and like only God is like what should define me. And then I had a lot of people be like, your words are really powerful, and like I can totally see you using them as like the Lord using them as like, you know, a way to like bring his hope to other people. And I was like, what? Nah. And then when I got home from New Zealand, the Lord was like, Emma, you need to write again. Like, I want to use your words. I don't want to use your writing. And so I was able to like I'm like rewriting a lot of my books. I've rewritten Journey Through the Displacer, like, 3 times or so. Been writing that one since I was 15, and I've written about 15 so far. Only like about 4 or 5 of them are actually going to make it to the publisher. But the Lord did mention that he wanted me to publish my books at some point, so hopefully that's going to happen at some point.
So far, none of your books have been published?
No, not yet. I haven't sent them to a publisher, and I've heard self-publishing is a really good option, but I don't have the funds for that yet.
We can maybe just talk a bit about self-publishing for a while. I might edit that out of this out of the podcast because I've self-published. Did I tell you I self-published books?
Didn't you say that you self-published children's books?
Yeah. It's really, it doesn't cost anything at all to self-publish them.
Really?
Yeah. It's free. Like, depending what option you use. So I use the company Blurb. They print the books on demand. So it's listed like on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and a bunch of online bookstores.
Mm.
And then it's printed on demand. So whenever anyone orders it, then they print it. And then if I want any copies of my book, then I have to pay for it. So that's why for a few of my books, I don't own any copies of them for myself. Yeah.
Wow, that's a really good idea. Okay, I'm going to look into that. That's exciting.
Yeah, I don't feel like I've done very well publishing my books. I've just kind of just published them, and I didn't really have like a launch date and like a launch team. But I've been a part of different like authors, like launch teams and blog tours for different books. And it's something I think I would like to get into and help other authors do. I would love to help them just like launch their book into the world.
Dang. That's actually one thing that I was like, I wanted to see if there's anybody who would like be able to help me do that. Cause like I have vague ideas on how to get more followers, get more people who are like, okay, interested in my book, but like I don't really know how to. I'm not ever on social media. I don't have time for that. But yeah, like I could probably get on social media more if I had to what, advertise my books or whatever. But yeah. I would be really interested in asking for help on that.
Okay, yeah. I've been doing that kind of thing for quite a few years. On my blog and stuff. Yeah.
A lot of experience there.
I mean, a little bit experience, yeah. You said you feel called to India? Would you like to talk about that some?
Yeah. First of all, my call to India happened when I was 12, or probably younger, actually. I just don't remember exactly when, and 12 is the year that the Lord, like, mentioned stuff about. And what happened was I was reading a science book, and it was talking about how everyone was, like, everyone in India, there's, like, so many people in India who are really, really poor, and they're starving to death, and there's, like, these cows, like, just around them, and they're not killing them and eating them because of their religion. And I was like, oh, well, I just go to India and tell them about Jesus, and then they become Christians and they eat steak, and then they're not starving anymore. That's like the best way to fix India. And I was like, oh, this is only makes sense. And then as I got older, I just started to be like, oh, this is a stupid idea. Like, and then of course, when my dad passed away, I was like, Lord, you cannot expect me to be a missionary without a father. Like, that's messed up. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have any support. My mom and I don't have the greatest relationship. And so it's like, you know, I didn't know what to do. And I just kind of gave up on the dream. And, you know, my dream was like way up here. I was like, oh my gosh, missionary in India, like rescuing lost children, like having a whole orphanage. And then I was like, well, maybe I'll be a hermit in the woods and I'll get like some sort of forestry degree. And like, that was like my idea. And then when I went to India, or English, when I went to New Zealand, I was in Character and Nature of God Week, and Chris Twin was speaking that week. And, it was almost like he looked straight at me, like sitting in the back of the room. And he was like, if you had a dream when you were 12 years old to start an orphanage in India, you better go do that because the Lord put that in your heart, not you. And I was like, yes, Lord, I'm sorry. So I got home and I got really excited about India and just like what the Lord was speaking on that. And he also spoke like children in the slave trade. And I really, really, really want to rescue I want to rescue children from the streets, and I want to rescue children from the slave trade. I'm a very defensive person. I love to defend people. And so I would love to see how the Lord uses that. And that's actually part of what Owosso was like, giving me experience and training when I was working at the summer camp, just to, you know, being out in the heat, being really tired, being overworked, and just a lot of the things. Plus, I bought my first Indian sari while I was at Owosso. So that was very exciting. And I have a salwar and some Indian necklaces coming in the mail in the next couple of days. And I'm really excited about those. They're going to be so pretty.
So yeah, you feel called to India. How soon in the future do you think you'll go to India?
That is a good question. So my being called to India is also like really, like it goes hand in hand with my getting married. Because I always thought I wasn't going to get married. And then, of course, the Lord showed me in New Zealand that he had a different plan, and that, like, he had a perfect man picked out for me, whatever, all the stuff. And so I've been praying about it a ton, and I keep being like, well, there's not many people in this world that are just, like, especially not in Conway. Like, you don't have people in Conway being like, I have a heart for India. So, like, finding a man with a heart for India is going to be hard in general, never mind one that will work well with me and we'd be able to get married. So I was expecting for me to get married after I go to India or something like that. But the Lord kept talking about Conway and talking about how he had a man for me in Conway. So my expectation right now is for me to get married and then go. But that will be after I finish my degree program. Because I'm a student at CBC, and I'm getting a Bible degree, and it's possible that I might also get a doctorate in theology, because I think that would be cool, but also I don't know if that's where the Lord's taking me, but the Lord also only tells me what he wants me to do for the next semester, so that way I grow my faith in him, and I do, like, want to go to India as soon as I most possibly can. Like the day after I graduate, I would love to go to India the day after I graduate, but that just might not happen. We'll see what the Lord has planned.
You've done some research about India and the religion in India.
Yeah. So, the Indians, typically, like, their biggest religions are Hinduism and Buddhism and Muslim. And well, Muslims are yes, their religion is pretty, like, they have some really, really dark sides of their religion. I've read some books about Saudi Arabia and just how the Muslim religion treats women, and how far away from God they are. And, like, that's, like, really, really sad. And I love, love, love talking to Muslims, because most Muslims, like, want to have a conversation, and, like, they want to argue. And I kind of like arguing, like, a little bit, to be honest. But, like, it's more like I love having a discussion. I love having a discussion about God. And one of the biggest things I always, like, love to talk about with Muslims is talk about their, the character and nature of God, and how, Christians and Muslims worship a completely different God, because our God is full, like, he operates based on love. There's a Trinity, right? There's the three Godheads, or sorry, there's the English, there's the three persons of the one God. So we believe in one God, and yet he manifests himself in three different ways. He is three different people, however you want to understand that. But the point of that is relationship, and the point of that is God is love, and, like, manifest love first and foremost. Whereas with Allah, because he is only one God and only one person within that one God, I guess, his mode of operation is power. And that's Satan's mode of operation. And every single idol is a demon, according to what Paul said in, like, 1 Corinthians or something like that. And so it's really easy for me to see the connections Allah being a demon who is trying to masquerade himself as God, and similar to God of the Jews and Christians. And the Hindus, they're multiple different gods and goddesses. I've read some stories. One of the stories that I was reading was at Owasso, actually. And it was about this this American woman who was essentially pulled into the Hindu religion and went to India to follow Satguru, which said that she was Jesus in a previous life. And just seeing, like, the Satguru was an avatar of Kali, which is essentially Kali manifesting herself, himself, itself on Earth. And this book gave a specific insight into, like, what was happening in the spiritual as this was, as her parents were contending for her soul in the spirit. And she was just diving, like, right into, like, some really dark areas. And it made so much sense to me. Like, Kali is a demon, a very powerful demon, because she's had a lot of influence for a long time. But she's not all powerful. She's nothing compared to Jesus. And she has this, like, web of darkness spread over certain areas of India, like she's some sort of queen over them or something like that. She thinks she is. But what Christians do, because Jesus is so, so, so good, we, like, go into those areas of darkness. Like, there's so much darkness. And we go into those areas and we say, here's the light of Jesus. And it's like a little candle, you know, like in the darkness, but, like, it spreads and the darkness is terrified of it. And it's so clear and so, like, contrast, like, it's so, like, an obvious battle that you can see, like, you go to India and you can feel it or you can see it. And I love that so much, just because it's like, I already know my God's one. If I were to stare Kali straight in the face, I can't say that I wouldn't be afraid, because I haven't, and I don't want to be prideful and be like, well, I'm not afraid. But, like, she's already lost. He's already lost. It's already lost. It's a demon. It's already lost. It knows it's lost. It's just trying to drag as many people down as it can. And I'm really excited to be able to spread the light of Jesus in a place that's so dark, because, like, I'm willing to fight the battle for those souls. And I know Jesus wants those souls. He loves them more than I do. So why not?
Mm-hmm. You know, we could have just talked about, yeah, you know, you're writing books and you're calling and stuff, and that would have been enough for an episode. But I was thinking we could talk about light and darkness some, and about what that is. And you talked and you mentioned how there's a lot of darkness in the religion, and, like, when you can walk into maybe a room or whatever and feel darkness, is, and I think I already know the answer to this question. I was thinking I might ask you, you know, what you think is more powerful. Like, do you think light is more powerful or dark is more powerful? And I guess just talk about their power some.
Yeah. I can do more than that. I can also explain why I know that light is more powerful. Mm-hmm. So darkness doesn't actually exist. Darkness is only the absence of light. Sort of similar with cold, you know, like, cold doesn't actually exist. Like, there's not a force of coldness. It's cold is the absence of energy or heat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why light is so powerful, because, like, you turn on a light in the darkness or whatever, and it's not like, mm-hmm. sometimes maybe it looks like the darkness is, like, fighting the light or, like, trying to, like grow. But, like, it doesn't do that. It can't. If you have a photon in an area of darkness, you're going to see the photon, or the little particle of light. There's no, like, there's no way that darkness can overcome light. If you have light and darkness in an area, you're going to only have light. Granted, sometimes you only have a little bit of light and it's just hard to see the rest of it. You know, like it only spreads so far, whatever, which is why you have to join it with other light. But I guess that's where the analogy kind of gets lost, because light is only an analogy of God. And I can tell you that light is much more powerful than darkness, but I'm saying spiritual light is more powerful than spiritual darkness. And it's only similar to how physical light is more powerful than physical darkness, but it is also still a little bit different.
One thing I like to think about, like when you flip on like a light switch in the room, you know, and the lights come on, I like to think that darkness flees. The absence of light is darkness, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What is the presence of light?
That's a good question. Illumination. The presence of light would be illumination, I would say. Being able to know and being able to see.
Mm-hmm. Being able to know and being able to see. Okay. What about gray? Gray/shady areas.
Ooh.
I just have that question there in the middle of nowhere, and I don't have any notes surrounding that question.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
Like, is it possible to have spiritually gray areas just as like it's possible to have like a physically gray area where like there's shade?
Mm-hmm.
I would say, ooh. That's a hard one, actually. I don't think it's a yes or no question. I think things can either have their source in darkness or in light. And I think oftentimes those sources mix, such as take a relationship, for example, or like my past relationship. I broke up with a guy a couple months ago, just before the summer. So he was not an evil guy. He didn't have evil intentions. He didn't want to hurt me, right? I'm not an evil person. I didn't have evil intentions. I didn't want to hurt him. But we let certain things into our relationship that wasn't from a good source. Things like distrust or lust or whatever. And you let things like that into your relationship, and then you have gray areas. So like, even though I wasn't dark and he wasn't dark necessarily, or like our intentions weren't dark necessarily, there was still darkness in the relationship, and it was very, very gray in some areas. In some areas, it was very light, and then in some areas, very few areas, it was very light. But in most of the areas, it was pretty dark. But that was because of like how our intentions mixed. And I think that happens a lot because the Lord isn't. I know there's some theologies that are against this idea, but I don't think that the Lord is like controlling. I believe he's sovereign, but I don't think he's controlling. And I don't think that he's like, if a place is going to have light in it, it's going to have only light. And if it's a place going to have darkness, and it's going to be only darkness. I think he wants, he's going to have light wherever light is allowed. If I ask for the light in my heart, then it's going to be there. But if I shut the light out in my heart, then it's not going to be there, because God's not going to like, he's going to tear down the walls to get to me if I call for him. If I don't call for him, then he's not going to like force himself on me.
Mm-hmm.
It's my opinion. I realize it could be wrong on that in some ways, but that's what I've found.
So we're just about done with our conversation about light and darkness. Let's talk for a bit about what the true source of light is. Maybe I worded the question a little funny, but do you think like God is the true source of light?
Yeah. Because I want to go more in depth and not just say God is the true source of light.
Yeah.
But like, yes, God is the true source of light, but light is not the true source of God.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I make this distinction is that God uses light to characterize himself oftentimes. You know, God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. Or the light is coming to the world, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of times when Jesus calls himself the light. But never is like light itself God. God isn't, God is light, but light isn't God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the distinction there is really, really important, because God also characterizes himself as love, but love isn't God. God is love, but God, but love isn't God. Same thing with water. But these are all just ways to characterize God. And like the properties of light are very, very similar to the properties of God. Or the properties of God are very, very similar to the properties of light.
Mm-hmm. I totally get that. I actually wrote like a few short pieces comparing humans to dishes. And so I was thinking about comparisons and how you can't compare a simple thing like dishes to humans and be like that, like because dishes aren't complicated, you know, but you can you can compare complicated objects kind of to simpler things to help you understand complicated beings. Yeah,
right. And I think that God definitely does that to help us understand him, because he is beyond us, and yet he wants to speak our language. So if he's going to speak our language, he has to find some way to help us understand him. And so he does that through the use of analogies, through the use of like experience, like we can experience him. And obviously he doesn't like want us to understand him completely, but he does want us to understand certain things about him. So he reveals those things.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, God is light. And we are, I know in the Bible he calls us to be a light. So I guess as humans, we can either be beings of light and darkness. Is that?
Have you ever met a human being that has accepted darkness into their heart and is like an emissary of that darkness, or like an ambassador of that darkness, or like spreads that darkness and is trying to like make that, what's the word, trying to empower that darkness or whatever?
No, I don't think I have. So
it's out there.
Yeah,
but you're supposed to be the opposite, you know.
Yeah.
And I have met also a lot of people who are ambassadors of light. Mm-hmm. And the ambassadors of light are always more loving and full of power than the ambassadors of darkness anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how, you know, like in the actual physical world, you know, when you turn on a light switch, darkness flees. But humans are interesting because, you know, we can be ambassadors of light, like you're saying, or ambassadors of dark. And so, you know, darkness, like in a room or whatever, when you turn on the light switch, darkness can't go toward the light. But I guess
the light could go towards the darkness.
Yeah. But humans, though, I guess if they're ambassadors of darkness, they can walk towards the light, can they?
Yeah.
But
I
can't help but think that I guess as they walk towards the light, maybe they'll be transformed by the light. Maybe.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? If they walk towards the light, they are.
I think, you know, if people with dark intentions, dark motives, walk toward the light and get closer to the light, they will be transformed by the light, I think.
Yeah. There is also the, and this is something I've been dealing with a ton coming back home from Owosso. If you are a light and you're walking into a place that is already very dark, and you, especially if you don't have community, and even if you do have community, a lot of times, it's like a candle looking out at a dark room that's really, really big. And you're like, oh, there's a lot of darkness here, and it feels like it's coming towards you, and it feels like it's surrounding you, it feels like it's in the air you breathe. And it's been like, it's really hard to see myself as something that the darkness is running away from, because it feels like the darkness is attacking. And that there is a level of, like, whenever I do walk out in the power of who the Lord is and who the Lord is in my heart, and if I go, hey, I am a daughter of the King, stop this, you can't have this space in my life, it usually works. Like, it usually, like, the darkness flees, because I'm calling on God, who is light. But also there are times whenever I forget to do that, or I do that but with, like, with fear in my heart, and it's like, it's hard to believe that, you know, like, that's something I still have to hold on to, that's something I still have to remind myself, is that, like, the light flees from the darkness, or sorry, English, other way around, the darkness flees from the light. But yeah, it's hard to believe sometimes that the darkness leaves from the light, and that all I have to do is be like, no, I'm light, leave, and it leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we're just about done with our conversation about light and darkness. I'm just going to ask, you know, how do you think your conversation could just be relevant and practical to just average, ordinary people?
It's a good question. I would think that everyone who is looking or watching this podcast or listening to this podcast needs to ask themselves one specific question. Am I an ambassador of light, or am I an ambassador of darkness? Am I living in the light, or am I living in the darkness? And living in the light, it has to be very intentional. You can't just be like, when you walk into a room, unless you have some sort of, like, automatic light sensor, the light doesn't automatically turn on. You have to flip a switch. And I feel like that's similar to how it is with the Lord. Like, if you walk into a room, you don't just, like, the Lord doesn't just, like, automatically turn on, I guess. Like, you have to call him into your life. You have to ask him into your life. You have to invite him. And you have to be like, hey, Lord, I want you here. I want your light here. I don't want the darkness here. And that was something that I did whenever I moved into the room that I'm in now. I moved away from my house and moved into an apartment. And the very first night that I was here, I turned on my worship music, because that's how I pray the most in the spirit, is like, I use worship music. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I was like, Lord, like, pour out your spirit on this place. Like, let this room be full of the spirit. Like, I don't want a single bit of darkness here. And let me tell you, I feel the safest in my room than I feel anywhere else in Conway so far. Like, there's been some houses that I've walked into and I'm like, yep, I can tell the spirit's here and not the darkest. But, like, yeah. You got to be intentional with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was good.
Am I right or am I wrong? Woo, that was such a good episode. I stole that line from Torn Wells. He uses that on his podcast. Am I right or am I wrong? But yeah, this was a good episode. It's been good so far. An amazing conversation. I hope that you found it really good, and that you will be able to apply some of the things that you heard in this episode. And just that, yeah, I don't know. Just hope you enjoyed it. And then, yeah. Well, I think a problem last year on my podcast is I talk too much, and I feel like if I talk too much, and probably say the same things in every episode, that I'll just ruin how good this episode is so far, how good it has been so far. And so, you know, I just want to keep it short and not talk very much here. And yeah, the episode's going to be ending soon, but I do have a song of the week that I'm sharing with you right now, and then some verses. We're going to be sharing some verses soon, and then, all that more coming up yet on the last few minutes of this podcast. So, I know it might be kind of lame me sharing, you know, a song for the week. Like, because why is it necessary on my podcast? Like, you know, there's so many other things I do on my podcast. You know, I had an amazing guest, an amazing conversation. Why do I need to share a song of the week? But I love listening to Christian music. So, the song for this week is I Don't Want to Miss It by Ellie Holcomb. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. This song is one of my new favorite songs, and maybe that's because I listen to too much Christian radio, I don't know, and they're playing it on the radio. They've been playing it on the radio recently, but yeah, it's one of my new favorite songs, and I love it. And so, the title, I Don't Want to Miss It, makes me think about sight and how I don't want to miss seeing it, but it's more, the song though, you know, the words of the song, it's more about the voice of God. The opening lyrics of the song is, there's like three lines about the voice of God, like it's voice of thunder, it's a million different things. It's and in the chorus, she says, I don't want to miss the melody that you've been singing over me. So she's singing about the voice of God and not missing that. But yeah, I love this song. It's my new favorite song. I love to like shout it out as I'm biking to and from work. Because there's also, I think it's the bridge that goes, you know, I breathe in, I love you. I breathe out, I love you. I breathe in, I love you. I breathe out, I love you. And I love that. And it's a really enjoyable thing to sing on as I'm biking. And a few things, so I wonder how much detail I should go into here. I love singing out loud while I'm biking, and I feel like it strengthens my lungs some, or I don't know. Not that I need to strengthen my lungs, but I'm just like, you know, you're really breathing hard when you're riding a bike. So this song, those lines, you know, I breathe in, I love you, I breathe out, I love you. I love those lines. Really fun to sing on a bike. And it reminds me of this a song by Rin Collective, Coming Home by Rin Collective. That also has breath, you know. It's been a while since I listened to it. Rin Collective is my favorite group, worship group. But it's been a while since I listened to that song, so I can't remember the exact lyrics, but it's, you know, to my final breath or something. Yeah, I'm getting carried away. I don't know. It's a really good song. I encourage you to look it up and listen to it. You can find it on Spotify or wherever else you listen to songs. I Don't Want to Miss It by Ellie Holcomb. Now, I guess it's time for the verse of the week. But I just want to share a video clip with you from a conversation where me and my guest talked about some verses. And then, yeah. But maybe just before I start recording, I was going to ask about verses. Did you have any verses you want to share?
John. All of John. John is amazing. But no, I'm going to go to John. probably John 8, starting in verse 12, Jesus calls himself the light of the world, and it talks about that and how him saying I am the light of the world is the same as him saying I am God. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I feel like one of the best passages that talks about light is First John 1:5, and this is the message we have heard from him and proclaim to you that God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. And I love this verse because I always struggled with the fact that in God there's no darkness at all. Like, God didn't give my dad cancer, you know. God isn't, like, the originating source of the dark things that we see, you know. He's not. He's the originating source of light, so it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wasn't originally planning to ask you about this verse here, but maybe we can talk about this verse some, because there's this verse that I really like. It's John 1:5, and it says, and the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehendeth it not. And I really like that verse, but what does it mean? Like,
One thing that light is really good for, as I mentioned earlier, is illumination. And one other way of thinking of the term illumination, especially in terms of spiritual light, is understanding. Whenever we have the light of Jesus, like when Jesus shines light on something, because he is light, right? So he can shine light on things. And when he does, we understand it. Like, one thing that he shone light on when I was in Adelasso was that I always knew, like, I knew from in New Zealand, God showed me that he wasn't the originator of darkness, but that he, but that, like, he is above and beyond our experiences. So we can't, like, we can't define our experiences based on, we can't define God based on our experiences. We have to define our experiences based on God. And that was like illumination, right? Jesus, like, boom, spread light on something. And I was like, oh my gosh, that makes sense. Like, I got so excited, right? And because of that, like, beforehand, I was in darkness and I didn't comprehend that. I didn't understand that. And it caused a lot of issues. Like, there was a lot of times where I was like, God, how can you be good and, like, be in control at the same time? Like, I don't understand, right? And then God, Jesus, like, gives me a little nugget of truth. He, like, shines a light. And it's like, boom, I understand. Like, now I have light. And now I have a proper understanding of Jesus. And I'm walking in the light better. And I'm, like, living that out better because I understand that God defines my experiences, not that my experiences define God. And, like, in that way, I was in darkness earlier and I didn't understand it. Therefore, the darkness itself doesn't understand it because it's opposite the light. It's outside of the light.
It's very interesting.
So, hi, it's me, NCR here, back again with the verse of the week. So I know you just heard me and my guest talking about a few verses. But you can never have too much Bible in your life. And so the verse of the week is actually three verses this week. It is Matthew 5, verse 14 through 16. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which art in heaven. So maybe, you know, there's three verses there and each one is unique and special. But my personal favorite out of these three verses is the last one. So let's just focus on that one and maybe make, I don't know, I said verse of the week and then I read three verses to you. So which one's the verse of the week? Maybe it's the last one and it's really the verse of the week, you know. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which art in heaven. Or which is in heaven. Yeah, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. And so, I don't know who you are listening to this podcast. And I say that every week because I don't know who you are. And so, for one, and I don't know, yeah, I haven't said that yet in this episode. For one, I would love to connect with you on social media to get to know you. But for another, like I said, I don't know who you are listening to this podcast. So I just want to encourage you. This verse actually has two big things that, remember how I opened up when I said we could talk about father figures and my guest lost her father, her earthly father, when she was 16. And so, you know, I don't know who you are, but I want you to know that you have a father up in heaven that loves you. And then another, you know what? And not only does he love you so much, yeah, your father up in heaven, he's the light of the world, and he wants to shine some light into your life. And he wants you to be a vessel of light for him. And I just want to encourage you, you know, if God has brought light to your life, I want to encourage you this week to bring light to other people's lives. Well, that's about it for this episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think at the beginning I promised that there'd be like one more joke or something at the end, but I've got kind of lightheaded now, so I can't remember the joke. But
So maybe I'll just ask you if you have, do you know any jokes about light or darkness?
I keep wanting to make a Greek pun, but nobody would understand those. Like, I could say light is a phos, which is the Greek word for light. And it sounds like I'm saying force, but that's a terrible pun, and it does not make any sense.
Mm-hmm.